what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chickie Bellis, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Helps if I turn my microphone on. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another adventure here on Southern Sense. And we are live up on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, X, also up on Big Patriot Radio now here out of South Carolina, Global Patriot Radio, a half a dozen other places. I have no idea. Amazon Music, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. Just go to our website. It's the name of the show, Southern Sense. Put a dash in the middle, southern-sense.com. I'm your hostess with the least most. It's Annie, the Radio Chickadee. And we've got a great guest today. We have the master sculptor, Saban Howard. And he's been up on the local news, making the news rounds. And I saw him up on Newsmax, but I know he's been hitting all the other major stations and periodicals. He is the artist that is creating the World War I memorial that will be dedicated this September in Washington, D.C. This is a massive undertaking. He's been working on this now for 13 years, from concept to completion. And it is an amazing, amazing piece of artwork. And if it doesn't leave you stunned, then you've got to be dead from the neck up. Anyway, we will be having him on the show, the first half, talking about the sculpture and the process that he's gone through to create this work of beauty. We also then have, on the second half of the show, Larry Swigert. He's got a new book out called A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. A very interesting book, and we're going to be asking him a lot of questions, like, is globalism really truly on a decline? Is there hope for the survival of America? So we have a lot to talk about and a lot to do. And those that do watch the show notice that we normally have my co-host, Curtis C.S. Bennett. He had to take care of some family business today, so he could not be with us. He sent me a message last minute last night. But hey, family comes first, and that's the most important thing. As long as he and his wife and friends are happy, safe, we'll have him back in next week. That said, those that listen and watch the show know that we start off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go out to Police Officer Jonah Oswald of the Fairway to Police Department in Kansas. And as I am doing this on my own, bear with me so I don't make too many mistakes. We want to make sure this loops. And here we go. The Dan Memorial page, and it simply reads, Police Officer Jonah Oswald succumbed to gunshot wounds he received when he attempted to arrest two subjects who fled from officers in a stolen vehicle. The Nexa police responded to reports of a stolen vehicle in Mission. As they attempted to apprehend the subjects, the male and female fled, hitting one of the Nexa patrol vehicles. Officers from neighboring agencies, including the Fairway Police Department, assisted in the pursuit on Interstate 35 until the subjects crashed their vehicle and ran into the Quick Trip at 4700 Lamar Avenue in Mission. Officer Oswald and other officers entered the store, and when officers attempted to arrest the subjects, gunfire broke out. Officer Oswald was critically injured and transported to the hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds the next day. The male subject was shot and killed, and the female subject was taken into custody. Officer Oswald was a United States Army Reserve veteran who had served with the Fairway to Police Department for 4 years and previously served with the Buckner Police Department. He is survived by his wife and two children. And this is from KansasCity.com, written by Maddie Gelman. And he wrote, Fairway Police Chief J.P. Thurlow remembered fallen Officer Jonah Oswald as a loving and super smart member of the small suburban department as he spoke to a crowd gathered in Harmon Park. Jonah's heart radiated, and it radiated through his badge, Thurlow said. He went on to praise the bravery of Oswald, who was fatally shot when police chased and turned into a shootout at a Johnson County convenience store. The death of the four-year veteran reverberated far beyond the city of about 4,000 residents, attracting hundreds to a parade and candlelight vigil honoring Oswald and his family. Thurlow repeatedly referenced the very small community of Fairway, where he said the residents and police force see themselves as one. The city never had an officer killed on duty before Oswald. We really all love each other, he said, standing in front of doors that had been removed from a patrol vehicle Oswald had been in about a month before when it was struck by a suspect following a chase. That suspect had rammed into Oswald's vehicle three times. Also on display was the vehicle that Oswald had been in a week prior. That incident struck in the minds of those who gathered in Harmon Park, many of whom appeared emotional despite not knowing Oswald or being from Fairway. Katie Salmon said for family and friends of people in law enforcement, Oswald's death is a stark reminder of the sacrifices that come with a police career. It's a calling. And so when you make that commitment, you have to just honor and love them anyway, any way that you can, she said, standing next to her husband of 20 years, a North Kansas City police officer. Her two young children sat by her feet. They had come from the parade, which began near Shamrock Towers at 9300 Metcalf Avenue, and watched the stream of police vehicles that ended up at Harmon Park in Prairie Village about an hour later. Salmon said the children understood the event was commemorating an officer who had taken the risks like those presented to their own father, who also drove a patrol car in the parade. They had witnessed similar events after North Kansas City officer Daniel Vasquez was killed in a shooting in 2022. They know the risks, but they outweigh the rewards, she said, looking around at the large crowd of people bowing their heads and holding candles above their heads. It never surprises me, but it always touches me to see how many people come out for these things to support each other. Miranda Lawson, 32, struggled to hold back tears watching the procession of police and emergency vehicles with her young, curly-haired brood. She looked out at the sea of red and blue lights, clutching a picnic blanket, stunned by the number of people in mourning. It's emotional, she said, wiping her eyes. Really puts the job in perspective. The five-year veteran of the University of Kansas Medical Center Police said that while she has taken part in other parades for fallen officers, Oswald's hits close to home. Fairway is really close to KU. We have buildings out there that we patrol as well. They're close neighbors, which makes it hard, she said. Her children were still learning about the sacrifices that come with a career in law enforcement when Oswald was killed. She and her husband, Zachary Lawson, had purchased children's books for their kids, explaining the work of police officers and firefighters. Her young son sought to understand what the parade was meant to be celebrating. She said it was not the first police funeral he had attended. He had asked me, what was that all for, Lawson said. After explaining that an officer had been shot and killed, she said her son appeared shocked. He wondered, who would do that? Then I started to cry. I said, there are bad people out there. When Lawson said she loves her job and finds it rewarding, Oswald's death has prompted many difficult conversations about the dangers of her work with fellow officers and family. It's all mixed feelings, Zachary Lawson said. It's just a part of the daily dinner table talk. Oswald, a 29-year-old husband and father of two young children, previously worked with the Buckner Police Department, where officers remembered him for his lighthearted and optimistic personality. He had joined the Fairway Police as part of a small, hand-selected group, according to Thurlow. The department has fewer than 10 officers. Thurlow said Oswald would often stroll into his office and playfully request more tasks to keep him busy. If he had seen the Saturday parade, Thurlow said, Oswald would have thought it was very cool and made jokes about the people who had arrived holding their signs upside down. If anything happened, we'd want Jonah to show up, said Kenneth Johnson, a friend and member of the Fairway Police. That Sunday morning, Oswald was among the officers responding to a situation that began with a stolen vehicle report with two suspects, a man and a woman. Lenexa police chased the stolen SUV, whose driver allegedly rammed a patrol vehicle, until the suspects bailed out and ran into the Mission Quick Trip at 4700 Lamar Avenue. Authorities have said Oswald was critically wounded during an exchange of gunfire and died in the hospital on Monday. Killed at the scene was one suspect in the auto theft, identified by police as a 40-year-old Shannon Wayne Marshall of Ashland City, Tennessee. The other suspect, 32-year-old Andrea Renee Coltrin of Goodlettsville, Tennessee, was ordered held on a $1 million bond in the Johnson County Jail. Prosecutors have charged him with four felonies, including an aggravated battery on a law enforcement officer. Today's show is dedicated to police officer Jonah Oswald. It's also dedicated to all of the brave men and women out there that serve as first responders, be they firefighters, law enforcement, or emergency services. We also dedicate this show to the brave men and women who serve in our military from the birth of this nation through today and into our hopeful future. And we dedicate to them this song by Tiffany, Soul of a Nation. May God bless each and every one.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free, we led with grace. Let it be seen, from sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other. Oh, for the soul of the nation, for the next generation. Let us be known as people of honor, humble and bold, faithful through fire. Let us hold firm through our convictions, with wide open hearts, eager to listen. Oh, Father, Mother, sure when our time has come. We gave them hope, we made them strong. Let it be said, when we finish this race, we kept them free, yeah, we led with grace.
Tiffany, and you can find her at online. She's up on, I have to find out her website. I apologize. Major brain fart. But if you just Google Soul of the Nation Tiffany, you'll find directly to her website. She's got great, fantastic music over there. As I said earlier, Curtis C.S. Bennett is not with us. He had a family issue to take care of. Nothing bad. Everything is cool. Anyway, just to let you know, if you are watching up on one of our Facebook channels or up on LinkedIn or where's it, YouTube and Twitter and X, if you type in there, your message will come through to me on this. It comes over to one-stop shop. So if you'd like, you can make comments there, and I'll try to get to them. I may not be right away, but I'll try to get to them. One thing I'm going to talk about before we go and have our guest call in, he should be calling in about 10 minutes, something I've reiterated many, many times on the show, that all politics start local. And this past week, I went head-to-head with my local county council, and the county council chair wasn't too happy with him, which made me even all the more happy. We have a sales tax referendum that is coming up here. They want to put on the ballot for November, and we're going to be fighting them, if anything, to help pare it back. It's $1.65 billion. I'm sorry, this is not the federal budget. This is a local county budget, and it's a sales tax that is paying for things that we've already paid for. But rather than my talking about it, I'm going to play the clip of my going before the county council, and when I got up there, very few people were originally were not paying attention because they had no idea that this was coming down the pike. But when I got done, people were listening and paying attention, and I was getting phone calls the very next day. So let me show you what I did this past week. Here we go. All right, it's the Annie Bell's chair of the Beaufort County Tea Party addressing the Beaufort County Council 2014 $1.65 billion tax referendum.
Ann,
good evening. My name is Ann Ubellis, and I am with the chair of the Beaufort Tea Party. I'm here to discuss the sales tax. You're asking us to foot a 15-year 1% $1.65 billion sales tax. You've got to be out of your mind. You can't run the Tafuski Ferry, nor can you control your staff's misuse of funds. Where is the investigative report for public review? An incomplete report we paid for. Redact the employees' names while the AG investigates. Release what you currently have to the public. This tax covers already approved projects from the 2018 sales tax. Only 24% are complete. 18 out of 25 are in design or pre-design stages. Only two are under construction. You include those unfinished projects in the new tax, we call that double dipping. We already paid and you want us to pay again. We already gave you public displeasure on Reimagine Rebuild. That's in the new tax. You create a $175 million slush fund for future projects, not future referendums for future projects. You throw another $975 million into a second slush fund for small projects. Highly vague description for your pet projects. You have county staff malfeasance with our money, and you want slush funds? Where is the participation and recommendation of the County Transportation Board? It doesn't exist. The council allowed unfettered growth. You fix it, but not on our dime. At the height of the COVID pandemic in June of 2020, with people hurting, people worried about staying afloat, this county council coldly and in our face voted yourself a pay raise. What compassion. Thank you. And you want us to trust you with a 15-year tax? That's generational taxation. This is not Charleston. Oh, wait. You say it's not an increase. A replacement. Nice semantics. I fled high taxes, irresponsible government. But here we are 24 years later, and you're no different. Sales tax went from 4% up to 8%, oh, now down to 7%. Just a few more dollars. Tell that to the struggling middle class, low income, and elderly when it's placed on almost every single goods and services in this county. As to the road use fee from every registered vehicle, thank you for the amendment to put it towards road maintenance and repair, not deposited to the general fund. However, because of the lack of county oversight on our tax dollars, keep the annual evaluation in place. You want our trust? You earn it back. Lower the sales tax. Complete all phases of the referendum of 2018, green space projects, curb growth, clean up the corruption, and access state and federal dollars. Then come and ask us for a responsible referendum for a smaller amount of money for a handful of years with a non-renewable sunset clause. Just maybe we'll say yes. We're watching.
Our last person, Carrie Majors.
There we go. And we're back. That was me getting a little ticked off. And I just realized I'm wearing the same shirt I wore last Monday. No, I don't walk around in the same clothing all day long. It just happened to be the shirt I chose to pick out today. But as you can tell, the chairman did not have a happy face when he saw that I was going to speak. And he was so disrespectful. He did not even have the courtesy to address me by my proper name. I wrote down Ann Marie Ubellis on that slip of paper, and all he said was Ann. Every other speaker, he mentioned their full name. And if that's not discourteous, I don't know what is. Anyway, as I said, all politics is local. If we don't stop them here, then they go up the food chain and we get the mess that we now currently have in Washington, D.C. So, I started the ball rolling, and we're going to keep it rolling, and it's going to be a landslide. The last time I went after them with the sales tax was in 2021, and we defeated the sales tax by 72.5%. And that's not a bad track record. So we'll see what happens now, and we'll get it stopped. Well, even if it gets to the ballot, we will make sure the public knows what is in there. And then again, let's see it defeated by another 70% or so by a very large margin. Previous sales taxes have seen, back in 1998, it passed by 59%. 2 years later, they had another sales tax passed by 58%. And the last sales tax that was approved was by 57%. So the people are getting mad. And the one that I fought was the after that, we defeated by 72.5%. So the public is not in the mood for another tax. And so we'll see what happens. And we have to take this action, not just here at home, but make our representatives know our emotions, our feelings, how they're handling government down in D.C. or in their state capital. Get your voice out there, folks. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call their office. Don't be afraid to write a letter or an email. Don't be afraid to do that. If you happen to live or work near one of their offices, stop in. I've done that. I pass Nancy Mace's office all the time, and occasionally I'll pop in and say, hi, just want to touch base. I want to see what's going on, and I see this and that has gone on and wanted to give you my thoughts on it. And at times I've disagreed with her, and at times I've agreed with her. But every time you do contact their office, they make a note. They write it down that so-and-so spoke to my staff on such and such a date about this issue. They keep track. So if you have one or two people, it's not something very important. You got 10 people, they're going to sit up and notice. So all you need is 10 of you. Friends, family, neighbors, you know, local drunk in the bar. No, don't do that. But you got to speak up, and you got to speak up often. And the more you speak up, the more they'll remember you and listen more closely to what you have to say. So that's what I have for this moment. Waiting for our guest to contact us, and he has sent me a message that he will be here. Waiting for Saban Howard to get online and get in here. He should be here any moment. Again, I'm sorry, I'm kind of like a little flubbing it because I don't have Curtis with me today to play off of. You know, there's something that came across, and I thought this was interesting. There seems to be a scam that's been going around, and I'm assuming they're using AI, artificial intelligence, to do this. And I've been getting a lot of phone calls on my phone lately, and there's no one on the other end. You pick up the phone, you go, hello, and silence. And I'm going to count to about 3 or 4. Well, by that point, someone should be saying hello. But what this new scam is that when you do pick up the phone, they go, can you hear me? I have a problem with my headset. Can you hear me now? And if you answer yes, they capture your voice and then use it for nefarious reasons, either signing you up for subscriptions you never approved of, but they've got your voice now on tape saying the word yes. So no matter what you do, if you do get one of these calls, avoid using the word yes. Use any other phrase. Can you hear me now? I'm coming across loud and clear. Can you hear me now? I just answered that question. You know, anything and everything you can to avoid saying directly the word yes, folks. This is something that was in the WLT report, and there's a video out there. Let me see. I did upload it. This is the video reporting. This is from an investigative reporter. Here we go.
We're staying on top of the latest scams, and the newest one to hit your phone could get you in trouble just for saying the word yes. How it works in this 7 News Consumer Watch. Welcome to a new level of scam called deception. It starts innocently enough when you pick up a number you don't recognize, like Amy Owens did this week.
And there was a pause, and someone said, oh, you're there. And I said, hello. And she said, oh, wait a second, I've got my headsets messing up. And I paused, and then finally she came back on, and she started speaking very quickly about a special that they were having or something they wanted to sell me.
At some point, the caller asks if you can hear them.
And I said yes.
Yes, one simple word that can be used against you. Reports to police and the Better Business Bureau across the country show the scam artists record you and may use your affirmative answer as proof that you signed up for a service like home security or a cruise line.
We don't advise people to carry on the conversation with them in the event that they are recording your voice. You know, they may be using your recording for fraudulent charges or anything like that. So it's not, the best thing to do is just to hang up.
The BBB adds, even if you're asked a similar question or to press a button to be placed on the Do Not Call registry, don't do it. Saying anything or pressing that button may help scam artists identify which numbers are active.
Keep in mind, it's easy for scammers nowadays to manipulate the phone number. So even if it's the local area code, if you don't recognize it, let it go to voicemail.
Owens plans to report the number to the Federal Trade Commission, the best way to help shut down these illegal sales tactics.
It's a total invasion of privacy. It's not right at all.
No, it's not. And in another version of the scam, Tom, the caller may already have your credit card number through a prior hack or something and is using the recording to authorize charges.
Yeah, we all have to be so careful these days, don't we? So if you think you might have gotten this call, be sure to check your accounts closely. We have a link on how to report this scam on WSBA.com.
All right. That was the story that I picked up. And I think it was out of here, out of South Carolina in Greenville. Bear with me here. I'm just trying to find something here. I apologize, but I'm waiting for my guest to finally sign in, and it seems like he may be having a problem, so I'm going to try to get a hold of him. And while I do that, let's see, I will give you Big Don until I can get Saban Howard on.
Every morning on time, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'3" and weighed 235. Kind of broad at the shoulder and fast with the lip. And everybody knew you didn't give no shit to Big Don. Big Don. Big Don. Big Bad Don. The dust and the smoke of this Democrat hell walked a giant of a man that the Patriots knew well, grabbed the sagging economy and let out with a groan, and like a mighty oak tree just stood there alone, Big Don. I'm talking about our man Donald Trump, he's the president now, and all you chumps can just settle down and stay in your safe space. We're about to make America a better place with Big Don. Big Don. Big Don, Big Bad Don. Well, old Don got to work because we got problems to be solved. And the Democrats shouted, the Russians are involved. Brought out their special counsel with Robert Mueller. Too bad the wall just got 10 feet taller with Big Don. Well, they will lie and cheat and steal and threaten and pander to illegals before our veterans. But we're over these liberals loading our country in a hearse. It's about time to put America first with Big Don. Big Don. Big Don. Big Bad Don. We're gonna put these criminals where they belong. We got people like Hannity and Julian Assange and all the centipedes following QAnon and Americans like me just singing my song for Big Don. The path ain't easy cause the devil's working hard, but we got God on our side and he's playing his trump card. Just remember my countrymen to always stick together. Fake news can't stop us from making this world better with Big Don. Big Don. Big Don, Big Bad Don. When it's all said and done, America will be great, and we'll build a statue just to commemorate a great man with these words on the slate. Thanks to the people's power, a man came from his tower to save America in its final hour. Big Don. Big Don. Big Don, Big Bad Don.
We should be having our guest call in very shortly. He just sent me a text message back, so hopefully he'll get to his computer or smart device or whatever and get on board. As I was saying, we want to talk to him about this fantastic sculpture that he's doing for the World War I Memorial. You know, we have World War II memorials. We've got the Korean War. We've got the Vietnam War. We've got memorials for everything, and I was surprised to find that on the 100th centennial of World War I, there was no memorial in the Washington Mall, and he was one of the artists that put in a bid, and it was the winning bid. So yeah, I'm excited to talk to him about his artwork and the work that he's put into it, And if you were to see some of the pictures, which I do have some of them to display when he does finally call in, or whatever you want to call this, open up his video and get in online with us so that we can talk about it. But something we've been talking about, and there's some people listening in on here that know what I'm talking about, because we know what it's like to be censored by the media. And Heritage Foundation had sent a message to me that the U.S. Supreme Court has heard arguments in Martha v. Missouri, a case concerning the government's ability to instruct social media companies to censor certain content on their platforms. Daniel Cochran, the Senior Research Associate in the Tech Policy Center at Heritage, issued the following statement after the conclusions of the arguments. This was done in the end of March. And today's arguments highlighted a troubling reality. Dominant tech platforms, government entities, and publicly funded organizations worked hand in glove to censor and manipulate public discourse around COVID-19 and the 2020 election. We urge the court to restrain the government's part in this collusive attack on Americans' fundamental freedoms and our elections. But ultimately, big tech's vast unchecked power over what we see and say online must be addressed. As the 2024 election approaches, courts and policymakers must act to prevent both big tech and big government from undermining. I just lost my place. unchecked that we see must stay online and must be addressed. As the 2024 election approaches, courts and policymakers must act to prevent both big tech and big government from undermining differing political voices and ideas. I'm sorry, I lost my place there.
Okay.
So he's having problems with his internet and he's having to reboot. that's the way things go today. I lose my co-host last minute. I've got a guest who can't get online. Oh, we're going to have a great show today. Oh, man. Anyway, if you want to make some comments or ask some questions, please feel free to type in on whatever platform you're listening on, whether it's Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn or Twitch or X. Type in or you see the video playing, and I'll try to answer and address those questions and issues. But we're waiting for Sabin Howard to dial in. And just to give you a scope of some of this artwork that he's going to be doing, this is the models that he had presented. And now imagine this that you're seeing right here at over 60 feet in length and 10 feet in height. And that is what has taken him all this time. The detail in some of these sculptures, you would swear that is a living, breathing person standing in front of you. And all coming from a sketch to this. And it is absolutely amazing. The facial expressions, even the way the float of the clothing, the action. And he used real models and posed them to create this whole fantastic sculpture. And it's amazing, amazing amount of work. And we do have him here. And I was talking about you behind your back. So welcome to the show, Sabin Howard. Good afternoon.
Sorry about that. I had a little technical issue. Get on.
Oh, man. So the audience knows I reached out to you because I'm the daughter of two World War I veterans. One was an immigrant from Italy who served in the U.S. Military, and the other one was an immigrant from Germany. And he actually, when he did his service in World War I, he actually was in the band. So he toured to all the frontline places and played for the soldiers. So it really touches home. And unfortunately, I never got to see any pictures of them in uniform.
Wow.
I don't know if any still existed anymore. Wow. But you've got an amazing, because I went through your website. I've got two scribbled pages of notes.
I'm sorry about being late.
Well, this has been a long journey. You know, you are one of several artists that presented your artwork. And what amazed me when I was watching your interviews and reading the articles, You never doubted that yours would be the final choice.
Yeah.
That was really stunning.
Yeah, it's it's so bizarre. I'm going to add this because I started in the summer in 2015, and I got with this guy from Texas, Michael Imber, and he blew it because he put a roof on the project, and you weren't supposed to do a roof, and then we didn't get in. And I was like, come on, you put a roof on the project and my sculpture's inside. Okay, that's great. But you're right, I never doubted. And then I get this email from Joe Weishar, who's this 25-year-old kid in September, and he's urging me to become a partner with him. And it's God had a plan for me, because there's no way in heck I would have ever made such a large sculpture with somebody who was more established. It was like I was the veteran sculptor doing it for 30 years, and this kid's 25 years old. He doesn't even have, like, an architectural license.
Doesn't shave.
there you go. It's like it was supposed to be that way.
Well, now, when I was reading the articles and stuff, I heard one saying it was 58 feet in length, one saying 65, one saying 60. What is the actual dimension?
58.5. But when you go to the foundry and you cast things, and you cast this thing, and it's 60 feet long, you're going to get bronze shrinkage. So the wall and the fountain are there. And so this has to be assembled, and it will be four sections that ship back from a foundry in the UK, and it'll be placed on that wall. There's going to be a little bit of shrinkage. We don't know exactly. It'll be around 58 feet. That's my guess. It could be 57.75, but it's going to be in that ballpark, and we'll find out when we get to that day.
Wow, it's going to be amazing. Now, this is going to be unveiled in September, correct?
Yeah, September 13th is the day.
I hope it's not a Friday.
Yeah, it is. It's a Friday the 13th. But wait a minute, though, because it's actually Friday the 13th is a very lucky day. It's auspicious. This is something that is more of a modern thing. It's because of the movie, Friday the 13th. You know, that's what happened.
Well, you know, I'm not an artist or anything. I don't pretend to be. But your piece is so moving. You actually tell a story. It's a diorama. And you tell the story from a father being called up to war. And it starts with the family, and then it just drifts through where you come to a high peak in it, and then you come back down. And in an interview, it struck me because I had goosebumps when I heard the word that it is the it's like a resurrection towards the end.
Yeah.
And life goes forward in the children, the future generations. And one of the songs we do for our dedication at the front of this show, because we dedicate each show to a fallen hero, I play a song by Tiffany, Soul of the Nation. And one of the lines in there is for the next generation.
Yeah.
And this is your sculpture. It is for that, for future generations to look at what mankind has put themselves through. It's not the politicians fighting. It's the everyday man. And that everyday man becomes the center focus of your whole artwork.
Yep. It's the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell, the you know, philosopher from he died like about 25 years ago. Joseph Campbell named it the hero's journey. So hero's journey is a story that comes from every spot on the globe, every culture on the globe, and has been going on since the beginning of mankind. And it's the story of how a person leaves home, then goes on an adventure, great adventure, and in this adventure is transformed, and then returns home to bring that spiritual awakening that has happened within him to back to his home. And so what I did is, it wasn't like an overnight thing. Look, we won the competition in 2016. We beat out 349 global design teams. And then from there, the shit show started. it was a Centennial Commission that ran this competition. The project was slated for federal land.
Congress wrote it into effect in 2013, and then the president that back then signed it. So a Centennial Commission had to run a competition. It was a blind competition. So they had no idea who Joe Weishaar was. That's why he could win it without an architectural license. And the reason he won it was because it was for the structure or the bones of his design most fit the park. And the competition was written that you had to make something that was a national memorial and it was also fitting of a city park. So you had to do two things at once. So that is what happened. And his was the closest to the bones and the structure of the original design of this Friedberg design. Well, then I come on and we win it. And I think we won it in large part because of the initial concept drawings I had, which are completely different than whatever happened in the next year. And we start then in the spring, and I have to go through 9 months of presenting to Centennial Commission to come up with a final iteration. So I went through like 20, 25 iterations over 9 months till we came up with that final one about that father soldier who leaves his home with his wife and his daughter and then enters into the Brotherhood of Arms and then leads a battle charge. That's the very middle of the relief. And then there's a cost of war, and he comes out shell-shocked and transformed. And so that's the whole thing. It's the transformation is not only like this soldier, that's the individual level, but it's also like the country and the world and an allegory for what happened with World War I, because that's the end of God. It gets like cut. It's no longer divine internet of all these parts, this fabric that we're all unified in one holistic universe. It's like now all these, this is 1918, all these philosophers come into being, like Sartre and Camus and Nietzsche, and that's all about like no God, alienation, chaos. We all are here to do our own thing on the planet. And now, you know, why, you know, 22 million people are dead. Of course people don't believe in God anymore. And so then that man, that father, returns home and he hands his daughter, she's the last figure, she's also the first figure on the wall, his helmet. And that helmet and that daughter are a representation of the next generation, which is World War II. Now, that was like a 9-month battle to get through Centennial Commission. Then you got to go through government agency approval.
The patience of a saint.
No, it's not that. It was like, it was just so valuable to me. It's like, here, this is my passion since I was like 19. And I love Italian art for its humanity and because I grew up in Italy and I'm half Italian. And it's like, that's sacred to me. And now I got to share this with these clowns and the government agencies. And that took a lot of courage on my part just to hold my ground because there was... Everyone's telling you, they're all sculpture experts now all of a sudden, do this, do that, put horses in, put biplanes in, we want more barbed wire, we want trenches, you know, we want machine guns. And it's like, I go home back to the studio in this process and I see on my wall The Last Judgment by Michelangelo. And it was like, do what you know, hold on to your truth. Mm-hmm. And I just like held on to that because that's all I had. You know, and if I had given in, I would have created a joke. And so it became a piece of art that was my art. But I learned something in this process, Annie, that's like huge. And it's the biggest thing that I've learned in the last 9 years. It's to be in service of something larger than yourself gives you tremendous power. You are no longer operating on your own. And this goes back to a concept that is about the universe, that we are all interconnected. So I drew from the power of, you know, something sacred, my belief in the divine nature of how the universe is assembled. And that's the type of art that the Renaissance art is about. So what I'm doing is very, very revolutionary. It's crazy. I'm doing traditional Western civilization art, and I'm presenting it in contemporary times. And we are at a moment where they are trying to trash and burn our history and Western civilization. And I am here to say, hey, guys, guess what? You're not on the right bus. Get off.
Well, this piece of artwork is phenomenal. It is so extremely moving. And what you do is you weave in there what it is to be truly quintessentially American, because you include women in there. You include Blacks.
Yep.
And you've got them at all different stages. Yep. And it's like we share this one story.
Yep. Yep. This is not a country with borders. It's a country with a ideology about two things. First off, you don't have to do the same thing that your parents did. You have free will. You manifest what you wish to do with your life, create your own life. That is no place in the world can you do that. And secondly, we are all created equal in the eyes of God. And so that ideology was brought to this project. And I made a sculpture that is not about labeling, you know, what race you are or what gender you are. It's about being a human being, because all the people that went off to fight 100 years ago all had red blood. They were all Americans, and they weren't Democrats or Republicans. They were human beings and Americans. They didn't have those kind of labels that, you know, these new fangled ideas that have sprung up to divide us. Divide and conquer is the way that you challenge something that you wish to dismantle. So I have made something that speaks about traditional values and sacredness, and also about we the people. This is very important.
Yeah. You also show in there the horrors of war and what the costs are. But you do it where towards the end, there is hope, because the helmet is given to his daughter upward to receive.
Yes.
It's almost as if you're looking into a looking glass or a wishing bowl. It's there's future, there's hope. Yes. And it's funny because I always say that God sometimes puts things into my hand when I do these shows, accidentally giving me a single theme, and it's up for me to figure it out, because I fell in love with your sculpture when I saw your interview. And then going onto your website, that your wife works with you on this sculpture too. She's your boss, right?
Yes.
And she's also a very talented author and lady also with you. But also I have later on a gentleman who wrote a book about the globalism that we're fighting right now. And what brought about World War One, but globalism? Yeah. What has brought about World War II, which comes next, but globalism? So, like I said, God had a way of putting the show together for me. Yeah. But people can learn more about your project and maybe make an appointment to go down to D.C. or up to D.C. where you live and view it in person. You have, 38 figures in this sculpture. You used actual models and took thousands upon thousands of photographs to make and create. And God bless those men and women that posed for how many hours in excruciating positions to do this with you. So this has been, what is it now? How many years have you been working on this one?
Started in 2015.
2015. It's 9 years.
I finished the design, the agency stuff finished with the drawing. The drawing was finally done. Then I even went to New Zealand, took that drawing and went to New Zealand and used a film company because they did Lord of the Rings. They're very, you know, film, you got to do something really fast. And so they're very efficient. So I went over there to get some help and have a bunch of people work under me. And I came back in, that was 2017 with a 10-foot reference model. I left the country too, because I knew if I stayed in the country that I was not going to get anything done. They were all going to come over and say, well, let's have a talk about this. We got to make a decision as a whole. And I just like went rogue. I disappeared. And I went to New Zealand and I sent back in February of 2018, a 10-foot model of it. That was from the drawing. I did it from the drawing, which had been passed through Commission of Fine Arts and Centennial Commission. And it arrived at Centennial Commission's office, and they were in tears when they saw it. And then Commission of Fine Arts blocked this for about a year and a half until we passed through all of a sudden. I'm not going to say anything else. Just passed all of a sudden. Nothing changed. And then it was like a crazy run to like, how do you do this, Sabin? And I was like, well, sir, we don't really have an answer to that. You need to like let me go figure that out. And then I took another trip around the country till I found a foundry on the planet that could do something like this correctly. And thank God I found the one I did, because we went through COVID in making the sculpture. This is, you cannot imagine how many bumps and hurdles I've faced.
Well, you actually outline it on your website, which is yournamesabinhoward.com.
Yeah.
And you show all the steps. You show the actors. You show the other sculptors that worked with you putting this together, and how you had to take them apart, the statues apart, to put them back together, to weave them around. It was a highly, highly complicated process.
Yeah,
all bronze figurines, and I can't even imagine what the final weight's going to be once you get the final piece.
25 tons.
Whoa.
It's coming back in 4 shipping containers and then arrive in August in Washington. And then we're going to use a crane to hoist it up out of those containers and put it on the wall, and then weld it together on the wall and repatina. That means the chemical tarnish on, so it's unified. And here's a really cool part. September 13th, I want to do a candle-lit vigil after I unveil it for veterans of our country. I think this sculpture is unique for veterans because it not only tells a story of, on a history level, you know, World War One, right? Because that's mm-hmm. the uniforms they're wearing. But any soldier who has served, no matter what part of the world they come from, will recognize their tale, their story.
Yeah.
What happened to them? What happened to them when they had to enter into the service? And I'm super psyched about that because I worked with veterans as models. I put their faces on the wall. Got Rangers, Marines, Navy SEALs, and all of them suffered from PTSD. They all said that they came back completely jacked up, and they were not ready to re-enter into society, and nobody was there to like teach them how to get back in. And this is a fascinating thing that I learned about our military and what it is to serve. I'm an outsider, but I really studied it because I wanted to do this project right, and I wanted to do right by them as well.
Well, that you have done, sir, and it is a beautiful, beautiful sculpture. And I'm urging anyone and everyone, once it's installed in the mall in D.C., make sure you take a trip to it and honor those men and women that gave all for us. It's a soldier's journey is the name of the sculpture. But you also have a book out with your wife, The Art of Life. So yeah. It'll go to your website, sabinhoward.com. They can look at the stages that you went through, how torturous it was for you. And you go from the very beginning, from the drawings, all the way up to where you are today. And they can see. There's an absolute wonderful article in the Smithsonian also, as well as others that you have up on the website. I downloaded the Smithsonian one to help get the notes. But they did get one thing in there that I said, well, they didn't quite get it all the way right. They were saying that you were the artist of light, but you can't have light unless you have darkness. And your sculpture shows the light and the darkness. You must have yin without yang.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Tracy, my wife, is also doing a documentary. We had a camera in the studio the whole time.
Right, that is true. You can get the link there on that website. Sabin Howard, it has been a pleasure. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but I'll have to have you come back again when my co-host is here, because he is a veteran of the U.S. Navy. I'm a veteran from the streets of New York.
Yeah, that's the same.
When we went through the police academy, we had guys in the military sitting there right with us. So I came out of the good old Mono. Thank you very much, and God bless.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, Sabin Howard, check him out. We've got our next guest in, Larry. I'm trying my best not to mess up your last name. Swikert?
That's it.
I did it. Holy cow, I managed to do that. Oh, man. Now I'm going to find your notes and tell me I didn't print them out. Son of a gun. I can't believe this. I had read everything else. I printed out the PDF because I did it on the Kindle. And I was so busy trying to get everything ready for saving, I forgot your stuff. Oh, man. What a goof. Why did I do that? But your book is A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline, which is out on Amazon. People can get it up on Amazon. It's also followed your other book, A Patriot's History of the United States. As I was telling Sabin, because he's, I don't know if you heard, he's got that World War I memorial sculpture. And it is absolutely phenomenal. People don't know the history of these United States. They only see what's up on Instagram or TikTok. It can only be 40 letters if they don't absorb it. But it's important you get the history out there and know what we're in for. Now, we have throughout history, throughout the world, had people that tried to control the entire earth. You've had Hannibal, you had Alexander. We can go on and on and on. But it's only with modern history that people have actually tried to truly unite the globe into a one world order. But it doesn't work, does it?
No, they've been at it for about 200 years, starting with the Congress of Vienna after Napoleon was evicted from Europe. And you got to remember that the Europeans at the time thought Europe was the whole world. So if they controlled Europe, they can control the globe. And I call this monarchist globalism because the kings were mostly involved in this. And then they used militaries and armies of missionaries to engage in a form of militaristic globalism. And that didn't work either because Native peoples have resisted this and tended to rise up. Next, we had diplomatic globalism after World War I with the Treaty of Versailles. And that failed largely because of the way they drew the maps and tried to control Europe at that time. There was a brief period of scientific globalism after World War II where scientists, led by people like Fermi and Niels Bohr and others, really did envision a cabal of scientists controlling the whole Earth because, and they said this, we're smarter than everybody else. That faded fairly quickly. Within 2 years, that was gone. Then we had the longest lasting of all globalism, which was the Bretton Woods financial economic globalism that's still with us in a degree today, although that's also unraveling. And then the most recent two were ones that we both lived through, which is medical globalism with the China virus and the vaccines, and climate change globalism with the celebrities. So that's kind of a short history of globalism.
Well, I have to apologize. I'm not really normally disoriented or disordered. My co-host is not with me today. But I did find my PDF notes. I did. I got them here with all little scribbles. We were talking about saving about World War One, which what about the League of Nations?
Yeah, the League of Nations was an early attempt at having an international globalist body control, I wouldn't say control the world, but control violence within the world, try to mitigate wars and so on and so forth. And it failed utterly, in part because the two biggest nations in the world at that time, Russia and the United States, were not a part of it, but also because it would not, and we, as we found with the United Nations, could not enlist enough support from enough nations to actually become an international police force. There's just no way to get enough Koreans and Ugandans and El Salvadorans to go in a multinational force and tell Germany, you're going to get out of Czechoslovakia. That didn't happen. So even the modern UN has struggled to do that. And most modern peacekeeping missions are heavily reliant on the United States, Great Britain, and France, and other major powers.
Well, the one thing that is sticking in the craw of the globalists is the fact that the United States actually exists. So the UN, League of Nations failed. We end up now in World War II. We come out with the UN. And this is going to be the organization that will bring about world peace. And the idea and concept was there, but men will be men and corruption will still exist. And what we saw, they have gone so far out of what they were normally tasked with, their charter, out of the way, that now the UN wants to have a small arms treaty in which they would then negate our Second Amendment rights. They are now working with the World Health Organization, WHO, on determining how we respond to certain emergencies. And things that are not even medical emergencies now fall under the World Health Organization because they deal with guns or they deal with free speech. They're finding any and every way in which to take down the United States because we're the one thing that exists on this planet that can stop a global government.
Well, I think there's more than one, but let's get back to some of these things that you mentioned. For example, none of these treaties, nothing the UN does and nothing the WHO does is going to impact the United States unless the U.S. Senate ratifies it with a two-thirds vote. And even this Democrat Senate isn't crazy enough to do something like that. So they can do whatever they want, and it isn't going to affect us, number one. Number two, the United Nations, in order to get the United States on board, in essence, had to create, it had a General Assembly, which is everybody, and the great Rush Limbaugh used to refer to that as sort of the cantina scene out of Star Wars. We had the good sense to create a Security Council of five nations, U.S., Britain, France, Free China back then, Taiwan, and Soviet Union. And what this did was it ensured that the General Assembly could act as crazy as it wanted to. But in the end, all it took was one veto from any one of the Security Council members, and it all came to nothing. And so the only two times the UN acted like the UN was supposed to act, which was all the nations got together and went in and supposedly tried to force an aggressor out, was Korea and the first Gulf War. And in each of those cases in Korea, the Soviets were outside. They were boycotting the affairs there, and they couldn't vote yet. They couldn't veto anything. And so the UN was able to act there. And in 1991, Gorbachev, seeing that his country was about to completely fail, basically went along with the UN and allowed did not support Iraq in that war. So basically, you could say the only times the UN has operated the way it was supposed to is when the Russians weren't involved.
Well, there's been numerous attempts in which to negate the power of the United States. And in the globalist mind, if you control the money, you can then control everyone. So you were talking about the Bretton Woods. What is that all about?
Okay, Bretton Woods was an agreement. They started a conference in 1944 with John Maynard Keynes and Harry Dexter White really in charge of the conference. I joke that you had the biggest economic development in the 20th century was run by a homosexual and a communist agent. But at any rate, it was an agreement that worked for over 50 years. And it set up the dollar. First of all, it set up the dollar as the international unit of exchange for trade. So that gave the U.S. tremendous power and influence because everything had to be denominated in dollars. They were coming back through American banks to get dollars. And the dollar was essentially the international currency. Number two, it provided for free trade. Now, this free trade obviously was not going to include the communist nations, either Russia, China, or communist East Europe. But free trade in the rest of the world was basically that goods could flow without any tariffs or any other international regulations freely. But this was to be supported and maintained by the U.S. Navy. The U.S. Navy would provide for the protection of the Suez Canal and Mediterranean, the Straits of Malacca, and all of the very important trade waterways around the world. And at times that also committed us to ground actions, places like Vietnam and the Middle East and so forth. The third part of Bretton Woods was that it established the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, both of these heavily subsidized by the United States for the purpose of helping what I used to call third world nations, the underdeveloped nations, right? Well, there was a problem that developed. It was called Triffin's Dilemma between the third point and the first point, which was for the dollar to be the world's currency, it had to be good as a dollar, as good as gold. But as soon as you start draining away money for aid to foreign nations, especially at high levels, and as soon as you start engaging in wars to protect trade zones, you run inflation. And when you run inflation, the value of the dollar drops. So you can't have those two things together in the same concept. And that's why we are seeing the decline of the Bretton Woods system right in front of our eyes today, because the American people just are not up for spending any more money on foreign wars, whether it's Ukraine or Gaza or wherever. They say, no, you guys handle it yourself.
Well, not only that, you have to throw in the fact that Richard Nixon was so kind to take us off the gold standard.
That's true. But he did allow private ownership of gold, which is very important. I remember I got my first set of Krugerrands back then. I made a very hasty profit after a few years because the value of gold skyrocketed. So although it was no longer a national backing for dollars, it was still available in the private sector. So it was technically still backing American money.
And there's so much to delve into in this one, because my late husband, his family were from Latvia. And after World War II, you mentioned FDR and Yalta, and boy, do you see people explode. And that was one of the problems we had. You had just a couple of world leaders splitting up the world, which didn't help keep the peace. But now with the new globalization movement we have, we've seen it come into full bloom before COVID hit through climate change, climate warming, they called it, the green gases, green energy, control the CO2 emissions, and don't even get me started on that one. Gregory Wrightstone of the CO2 Coalition is a friend of mine, so we can go on a full rant. But somehow or other, if they can't control us through force, they find some way through coercion. So they get the, I'm trying to think of the proper word I want, brainwashing into the kids first. And the kids are going to tell the parents. Oh, isn't that John Kerry? Not John Kerry. Dan Quayle that said, kids, your parents are too stupid. You got to tell them what's going on with his inconvenient facts.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the whole climate change thing is pretty funny. Rush Limbaugh warned us about this back in the early 90s when he pointed out that the war against SUVs back then was the first step in this, what would become this climate change movement. Now, we are living in a very interesting time because we're starting to see the whole climate change garbage unravel right in front of our eyes. And it's really beginning with the electric car, and those same kids who were all for Captain Planet have now grown up and they bought a Prius, and all of a sudden they realize that they can't afford it because the batteries, if the batteries go bad, you're talking about buying a whole new car. Their weight on the highways is causing all sorts of problems. Canada is having to redo all of its guard barriers in the whole country because the guard barriers can't take a heavier weight electric car smashing through them. Basically, all sorts of electric car companies are failing or going out of business. Fritzker 2 weeks ago was the most recent to go out of business. Ford has cut back its line dramatically. Volkswagen says they're not going to do any more of this stuff. So the whole electric car thing is a giant bust, and we haven't even gotten to the electric bus, electric trucks. When you look at an 18-wheeler, if you try to put that on batteries, you're looking at a truck that's going to weigh 20,000 pounds. Now, folks, if you're not happy with your highways now You think you have a lot of highway construction now? I came from Ohio. When I started at the University of Dayton in 1985, there was an S-curve around Dayton that was under construction. Folks, it was just completing construction when I retired in 2016. Every place I go in Arizona, and we used to be really good about fixing our roads, there's the orange cones. It's like spring is here. You know, spring is here because all the orange cones pop up everywhere, right? So, folks, if you think you're having fun with your highways now, just wait till you put a fleet of 20,000-pound electric trucks on the highways. They will be under constant construction everywhere all the time, and your gas taxes and other taxes are going through the roof. And it won't just be gas taxes. Oh, no, you're not going to just get to stick the gas guzzlers. The states are already starting to impose special fees for those who have electric cars because you're not paying your fair share. So this is all coming to a giant collapse here. Within the last few months, it's looking really bad, and the EV makers are all backing off big time.
Oh, they are. Number one, if every household had an electric car, our electric grid cannot handle it.
No. No, the numbers I saw were that at present, our electric grid can handle 0.05 of all the demand of the electric cars if they took the place of current cars, let alone 5%, 0.05%. So the cost of the electric grid just for trucks would be astonishing. You realize there's 311,000 parking spots for 18-wheelers in the country, and that includes, you know, your pilot gas stations, but also includes your rest stops. Now, if you've driven across America like I have, you've been places like Huay, New Mexico. And anybody who's ever been to Huay, New Mexico knows why it's named Huay. And why did you come to Huay, right? And you're going to have all these stalls with electric outlets for all the trucks if you do that. We're talking about 311,000, 312,000 electric stalls around the country. It's just not doable.
No, it's not. Absolutely not. Which is one of the reasons why my state here in South Carolina is looking now to reopen or open up new energy plants using gas, coal. You say, hey, wait a minute, these things do work. And oh, by the way, we do need CO2 for plants to grow. If you don't have enough CO2, we are not going to have enough plants. If we don't have enough plants, we don't have enough food. So, you know, it's really sheer stupidity.
It's so crazy that the Germans are cutting down forests to put up coal plants, that they're cutting down things that actually make the atmosphere cleaner in order to put up plants that make it dirtier because they don't want to use gas and oil. It's just astonishingly stupid.
It is. And then what goes into these electric vehicles, there's so much hazardous material, especially those lithium batteries. A friend of mine was in the hurricane down in Florida recently where the electric vehicles were spontaneously exploding because of the hurricane, of getting wet in the storm. He said the house next door went up and it caused damage to his house because the electrical vehicle parked in the garage. They are hazardous.
Mike, let's not even get into the slave labor by all the kids that's required to dig the lithium out. I mean, every place you look at this, it is anti-human, it is anti-planet, it is anti-climate. Everything about the whole electric wind power industry, you know, the windmills they've discovered offshore kill whales because they generate a certain type of vibrating sound that attracts the whales to the beaches. So now you're having a fight between the Save the Whales people and the wind power people. And thank God, two of the three largest wind power projects off the coast of New Jersey and New York have been canceled. So
thank God.
We're progress on every front.
No, there's also, if you're living near one of those wind farms or you have one of those wind turbines, the vibration, there's some sort of a sonic type of vibration that causes mental illness. So people have been
complaining. Democrats, I get it.
We got it. Hey, folks, we just solved a world problem here, Democrats. Or as we like to say, Democrats.
Earlier you were mentioning how the U.S. kind of stood alone, and it is true that we are the major obstacle to globalism. But right now, the globalists have their hands full because They counted on getting rid of President Trump, getting rid of Bibi Netanyahu, getting rid of Bolsonaro, getting rid of Putin, and getting rid of Xi. And so far, Pooty Poot is still there. Bibi Netanyahu is back. He came back. Xi never went anyplace. Bolsonaro's gone, but the guy Javier Milei in next door Argentina is every bit an anti-globalist as Bolsonaro was. And it looks very much like, based on all the polling and everything else, that President Trump's coming back. I hope he brings with him 50 mighty men and women, a Terminex van, and a flamethrower, because he's going to need it.
Well, your book, A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. So my question is, are we truly in a decline? Have we hit that point on the Laffer scale that says we swung all the way over and now we're swinging back? Have we hit that point on the Laffer scale?
Yeah, I think we're well into that. For example, take the vax. 82% of the people took the first vax. Only 50% took a booster. Only 2% say they'll take another vax. Now, I was just at a small Bible study group last night, and one of the people related this story that a nurse that we all know, who was very, very pro-vax, not just China virus vax, but all vaxes, she was so taken aback by what happened with the China virus vax, she now has become an anti-vaxxer for any vaxes. So it's kind of really having a significant effect. People do not trust doctors the way they used to. I mean, I remember growing up and your doctor's word was law. They said, you know, do 10 push-ups every morning and you'll be fine. You go out and do your 10 push-ups, whatever it was. So we're seeing it there. We're seeing it politically, not just those people I mentioned, but Slovakia, Hungary, Italy, most recently a month ago, Portugal, Argentina, El Salvador, all had elections that were populist in nature and anti-globalist. And so this is really a fever that is spreading. Like I said, if President Trump comes in, that will greatly accelerate the anti-globalism around the world.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, because we got to turn this around and turn it around soon. One of the things that globalists are hanging on to is now this digital currency. Mm-hmm. Now, this actually did happen to me. I went into a pawn shop to purchase something because you can get a used computer in very good condition rather cheaply. But in the name of the pawn shop was gun. No sooner did I make my purchase, walk out of the store, and my car was parked directly in front of the store, my phone dings that my card has been suspended. And this is a card I had had since the 1990s. And I'm calling them. As soon as I get in the car, I'm calling them and saying, what is going on? Oh, we had a suspicious purchase. And I said, oh, you mean from XYZ Pawn and Gun Shop? Is that because it's got the word gun in there? Oh, Mrs. Ubellis, no way, no, I'm sorry, it's just a clerical, somebody hit the wrong key. Yeah, right. But using the digital currency now leaves us open for another form of control.
I don't know where I stand on digital currency yet, because I hear it from both sides. The free marketeers, the libertarians, all insist that digital currency is the only way to go to prevent governments from taking over your money. And to an extent, they may have a point. But the other side is, well, government should be able to hack that, can't it? Those who support the blockchain ideas say there is no possible way a government can hack the blockchain. Those who don't trust government say governments seem to find a way to hack almost anything. Mm-hmm. And we need to be careful. What encourages me is not just, and I own some digital, but it's not just the rise of digital coins. But gold and silver prices are going through the roof again. And I, for 40 years, I tell my students, don't invest in gold because you've got to pay to hold it. And you know, you're not going to get as much when you sell it. It's just not going anywhere. Well, folks, it's going somewhere now.
Yeah, $24.
Digital's going up. My digital property tripled in value here just in the last 3 or 4 months. So there are a lot of breaks and a lot of counterbalancing factors, including the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Saudi Arabia are trying, I don't think they'll succeed, but they're trying to create a new dollar that would not be the dollar. Just the fact that they're trying that helps keep us in line. But people need to understand that right now, nothing that makes any sense is going to work on the current occupant of the White House, because this guy is so brain dead. He has no clue what is going on. He's being run by a cabal of people behind the scenes. And the good news for all of us is they don't agree on a whole lot. These cabals are like Hitler's insiders. They're all jockeying for position and fighting each other. So as long as they're fighting each other, they can't do too much damage to the rest of us.
Well, it has been so much fun having you on, Larry. Gonna have to have you back again. You were so much of a pleasure to speak with. And you're a pisser. You really are. And I just wish my co-host had been here, but he'll be back with us next week. So, Larry, people can find your book, A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline, on Amazon now. And also your other book, A Patriot's History of the United States. Yeah. Learn more about, folks, because if you don't know the Constitution and our history, then you're giving the greatest freedom away. So God bless, Larry.
You can get me on wildworldofhistory.com.
Okay, fantastic. Wildworldofhistory.com. Thank you, Larry. And God bless you for the hard work you do. All right. We'll be back here next week. We have showing up Mark Tapscott, my friend from the Epic Times, will be returning. We also have Chris Yerski and Typhoon Lou Marion. Chris is running for a seat down in Florida, and Typhoon Lou, who's also a good friend of mine, is hosting his campaign. So, we will be back next week, and I want to thank everyone that has been listening here, wherever you have been, whether or not you've been on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, and X, as well as going up on Amazon Music, iTunes, Apple, half a dozen other places also. We will still be broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio, but it will not be live, so you can still always find our show there. So with that, that's all I've got for you guys today, and I want to thank everyone for being with us. And till then, I will say good night and God bless.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross, mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. In as still we believe, in God we trust, and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not America. Do you hear our battle cry across America? We've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their lies. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. For the friends I have loved and lost, and I still believe in God we chose, and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America.
together we can save America.